going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Going the Distance podcast presented by ImmaculateSports.com. Twitter's at ImmacSports.
Instagram is Hustle at ImmacSports.
TikTok, YouTube, Immaculate Sports. It's episode 213. The MLB playoffs are still going strong. Metropolitan's up right now on the Phils, about to take a series lead possibly here in the last inning. But it's also the quarter season for the NFL. We're going to go through the awards for that. Just a really wild season. We're going to try to figure out who's for real and who is not.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun episode, kind of just like the status quo episodes that we do every other week, where we're just checking in with power rankings. And then, like you said, the quarter season awards. We'll go through all of the main NFL awards. But before we get there, we got to do our openers and stuff as we always do. And why don't you hit it off with perhaps the Heisman leading candidate right now in Boise State running back, Ashton Jeffrey.
Yes, the Boise State running back and Heisman candidate, thank you, was phenomenal once again this weekend. It was a 62-30 win over the Utah State Aggies, who haven't really done much since Jordan Love was there. Gentry had 13 carries for 186 yards and three touchdowns. Two of those were 60-plus yarders in just one half. This guy is so special, and it's really fun to watch because he's got it all. It's the power at 215 pounds. It's the 4.2 clocked breakaway speed and great balance to help create those 60-yard runs every game. And giving Boise a shot at the playoff is just ridiculous on its own, even if they don't end up making it.
Yeah, and something I'm curious with him is something that we won't actually get to see unless he gets into the playoff. And I guess we saw it against Oregon, so it don't really matter. As far as draft stock goes, just like obviously there's a tackling difference between guys in the Mountain West to the SEC, the Big Ten, or whatever. And so I'm curious on how scouts determine his ability to legitimately break tackles against, you know, NFL-type players rather than some of the tackling attempts that we've seen against people in the Mountain West and some of the other conferences that they've played. But regardless, I mean, he's done everything as a running back. There's no really way to say that he's bad at doing it. He's been ridiculously good, and I think doing it at this clip definitely shows that it's something that he can do still at a productive level, even not close to this extent in you know, the National Football League. But my opener, I got to talk about the MLB playoffs and how crazy of a start it's been there. We saw the Tigers upset the Astros. We saw the Royals. I don't know about upset the Orioles, considering it's pretty evenly matched, but still the lower seed Baltimore home team ended up getting kicked out of that. The Padres, pretty much the only one that we really expected to 100% happen was to beat the Braves, and that did happen. And then the Mets and their crazy victory over the Milwaukee Brewers in the wild card round. Pete Alonso, we'll talk about him maybe a bit more a bit later. And then in the divisional round that we've seen, obviously now that the Mets are likely going up 2-1, but all the series, all four of them were at 1-1 going into today. And that's something that hasn't happened since the MLB installed the division series in the 90s. So it's, you know, 30 years now at this point that this has never happened. And now with every series being at 1-1, it means that we have four best of three series, kind of just like the wild card round. So it's interesting to see how that, you know, changes now, especially with pretty much every single road team now having the home field advantage. Being as, you know, they get to play two games at home, at least in 3 and 4. But regardless, it's been crazy. We've had, you know, crazy storylines with the Tigers and Kerry Carpenter and Tarik Skubal and all the stuff that they've done. And then the Yankees and, well, you know, what's going on there. But craziness so far. And we're just getting to the good parts as well, too. So it's been exciting so far. And I expect to see a lot more madness as we get into the second, third, and fourth weeks of October, maybe even into November. You never know. But there is some other news that's going to talk about before we get into the players of the week. Tell me about Bob Sala. I don't have a good way to describe it. Just go ahead and tell me what happened there.
So, yeah, Robert Sala was shockingly fired this morning. I didn't really see this one coming, at least right now, mid-season, right? But here's the real deal coming from a Jets fan. I just wanted to talk about it. No BS, no speculation. What in the world is going on with this team? Because I've been trying to mentally prepare myself for something like this, even though it's never happened with this team. The Jets are going to jet sometimes. So here it is. I don't think the season's over yet. Yes, I think Saleh did get screwed, but this goes way further back than people realize. When Saleh handed the reins of the defense over to Jeff Ulbrich about 3.5 years ago, Coach Saleh wanted to take more of a CEO approach because that's what we've been looking for. You want to have that guy who everybody from the top to the bottom of the organization trusts. Because Saleh knew this defense was about to be pretty good. He also wanted Sam Darnold to be his quarterback of the future and his best friend Mike LaFleur to call the plays. And when ownership, aka Woody Johnson, came back after working with Trump, he immediately traded Darnold to Carolina. He immediately fired Mike LaFleur. And since that day, we've seen a different guy. It's not the same energetic, psyched to be there with his guys, Saleh. It's the angry, depressed Robert Saleh. And it probably affects his job, too, in some way. So at the end of the day, I don't think the defense is going to go anywhere as long as Jeff Ulbrich is still here. I've always thought Brick was a great coach, a guy who deserved a shot as a head coach. And if this thing ends poorly, they were all getting fired anyways. So why not see if he has a little bit of his former mentors in him? He's a former linebacker. The guys love him. Reminds me of Vrabel or a Dan Quinn, two guys that he coached under across the league. The issue is obviously the offense, right? The rumor is Saleh tried to get rid of Hackett and was fired 5 minutes later by Woody Johnson. And I believe that. I don't think it was Aaron Rodgers, because Aaron Rodgers is a Hall of Famer, of course. It's a great football mind. I'm sure he has a lot of say, but nobody goes over Woody Johnson on the totem pole. This is the guy who fired Rex Ryan after back-to-back playoff wins. The question is, does Ulbrich have the power right now to change that offensive play caller to a Todd Downing or a Ron Middleton, assistant coaches who we constantly send to the Senior Bowl, to the combine, to run drills for the young guys because they're so well respected across the league. So I'm not going to give up hope, but things are definitely weird and, you know, a little foreshadowing. They can't be in the top 15 at this point. There's way too many question marks.
I would say do not give play calling to Todd Downing because he was the Raiders OC in 2017 when we took a big step back after 1-12 games and Derek Carr being an MVP candidate. But regardless, good thing that you were able to talk about that because you obviously have the more insight on that topic than I do. So thank you for that. But moving on to our player, pitcher, rookie of the week. It's still got weekly awards even being in the playoffs. There's still pitchers and rookies doing things that are big. But we'll start off with the player of the week, Skyler. Who do you choose here?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Fernando Tatis Jr. He led baseball in hits over the postseason. And with 9 of those and only 14 at-bats, I believe, .643 average. The only player with a 2-dot and 3 homers compared to a 0 Ks. He's just been on another level.
Yeah, I decided to go with statistic or like magnitude rather over than just pure statistics. But Tatis definitely had probably the best statistical week of the, you know, postseason so far. But I went with Pete Alonso for my player of the week for his, you know, season saving home run that he had in the 9th inning against Seven Williams, one of the best closers in all of baseball in Game 3 of that wild card series. Going into today, it was only 3-for-17, but 2 homers and 5 RBIs. He just added a 3rd homer today as well, too. So Pete Alonso may be heating up for that Mets team that looks to be taking a big, you know, 2-1 series lead against the Phillies team that's been to back-to-back NLCS and almost to back-to-back World Series. So Pete Alonso is going to be my player of the week. On to pitcher of the week, and I don't think this one's as contested. I think there's one guy that stands out.
You know, the one guy that stands out was fantastic, but you could make the case for about 7 other guys with similar numbers. I cut it down to 2. So obviously we'll talk about Tarek Skubal. He's had 13 shutout innings so far and 14 strikeouts against Houston and Cleveland, two of the top teams from the American League. I had to shout out Michael King of San Diego. 7 shutout against Atlanta, 12 Ks. That was one of the best starts in San Diego history. I was getting goosebumps watching the what do you even call it? Not a slurve anymore, but a sweeper, I guess. Just completely
a little bit of both with him. Yeah. And he's also getting his 2nd start tonight, so maybe he has, you know, a chance to kind of say, hey, maybe I'm that guy for that. But my pitcher of the week is going to be Tarek Skubal for his back-to-back shutting down of elite lineups with the Astros and the Guardians. 13 innings pitched, only 7 hits allowed, 0 runs, 1 walk, 14 Ks, and he was loving it, especially yesterday in Cleveland. He was saying shut the fuck up to the fans. He was like encouraging them on, and that's stuff that I've really seen from him specifically. I know he's kind of a fiery guy, but to go direct at the fans is pretty interesting and pretty fun to see. I talked about this a week ago when we were doing just the playoff predictions, and I think I've talked about it multiple times throughout the year, where this Tigers team just wins when Scooble's on the mound. They find a way to score for him, and I know he didn't get the victory technically, and I think he got it in the first game against the Astros, but I know he didn't get it yesterday against the Guardians. But they find a way to win when he's on the mound, and with you know them likely winning every single game that he's pitching, it makes it so much easier to win a series. You look at this series against the Guardians, we'll probably see Scooble in game 5 if it comes down to that. So you just got to win game 3 or game 4 if you're the Tigers, and I think you have a good shot to make it to the ALCS. But just what Scooble's done and being that sure of a victory is pretty crazy. So I got to give a player of the week honors to, or pitcher of the week honors to him. What about rookie of the week?
Jackson Chirillo deserves that honorable mention. He keeps Milwaukee alive with 2 massive homers in the first round, but unfortunately they didn't get past that point. So I'm going with the other Jackson Merrill, because he's been completely unfazed in his first postseason ever. 6 for 14, but it's 3 big extra base hits. It's 5 RBIs. No other rookies comparable to him right now.
Yeah, I went with the Jacksons as my rookie of the week. I didn't distinguish between which one, so I'll talk about them both. Chirillo, like you said, definitely deserving of an honorable mention, but the 5 for 11, 2 homers, 3 RBIs, and a stolen base at the young age that he is, it's crazy. He's going to be a guy who, we expect this Brewers team to be coming back to close to the playoffs, at least, next, 5 to 10 years. And he's going to be the main part of that. He's an MVP-type player, maybe, when we look at it, when he's 23 or 24 years old. And right now, especially in the second half of the season, what he did definitely had to be recognized. Jackson Merrill as well, too. I said it on, X or Twitter. This guy has MVP-type potential. And why I also said he doesn't deserve to win the Rookie of the Year, he definitely deserves to win the Rookie of the Week this week, because he went 6 for 14, had a double, triple homer, like you said, 5 RBIs as well, too. He's just a stud and plays good defense as well, too, and is also like only 21 years old. So Jackson Merrill, Rookie of the Week, and also Jackson Chirillo, too. On the NFL side of it, we finally got the crazy offensive week that we've been waiting for in the league. I think we had like 3 or 4 teams score 40 points, and then a whole bunch of teams score in the high 30s as well, too. Ton of really good quarterback statistical outputs as well. Who did you choose for your player of the week?
I stuck with Kirk Cousins, because 509 passing yards is ridiculous no matter who you are. Add 4 touchdowns to that, and you got a big divisional win on a crazy, wacky Thursday night. And of course it was Kirk Cousins, right? I mentioned why I picked Tampa is because Baker usually thrives in these situations, but hey, we got a new Kirk Cousins here in Atlanta.
Yeah, I tried to choose Lamar on this, and I think he definitely deserves to be talked about a little bit for his insane performance in that comeback victory for the Ravens in Cincinnati over the weekend. But Kirk Cousins is the guy that I chose as well, too. 42 for 58, 509. I believe that's Atlanta single game record for passing yards, 4 touchdowns and interception as well, too. He was just dominant. And I picked this Atlanta team to be really good this year, and he was one of the main reasons because of that. He's got the weapons with him. And I think this Atlanta offense is just starting to scrape the surface of what can be possible for that team down in the ATL. Defensive player of the week, Skyler, who do you choose?
Yeah, I went with Pat Surtain. He had 2 pretty big interceptions in Vegas. Were they 1 each for the quarterbacks?
I honestly didn't realize he had the second pick, because I turned off that game for the first time in a long time.
Yeah. Anyways, one of those went for 100 yards and a touchdown, so I had to give it to him. He is a crazy playmaker as a corner, and we're seeing a new era of these crazy ball hawks. Pretty cool.
Yeah. And I saw it in the stats. I just didn't realize that it happened when I was watching the game. I'm just going to ignore that performance, because I I just can't do it. So I went with Trayvon Walker, the former first overall pick, who actually had a really good game for the Jags yesterday in their first victory of the 2024 NFL season. He had 3 sacks and a forced fumble for a guy who kind of seemed like a, I wouldn't say a bust, but just not the player that was expected to be. He kind of came out of nowhere being a first overall pick as well, too, where he's just less known than everybody else. And then Hutch goes number 2, I believe, and already has 6.5 sacks in 4 games this year. Regardless, Trayvon Walker put himself back on the map with this performance he had this past week for the Jags, and so he's got to be the defensive player of the week for me. On to rookie of the week.
Yeah, I'm going with Kyle's guy, Tyrone Tracy. Career highs and everything this week for Tracy. A massive win at Seattle for the G-men. It was 18 for 129 in his first start. And I feel like this happens multiple times every year where a team goes, wow, it's almost like we should have been playing our best running back the entire time. Well, now they know. I still think they could split the backfield for a little longer for fantasy purposes. But at the end of the day, this is your best back.
Yeah, Tyrone Tracy Jr. is going to be my rookie of the week as well, too, for his 18 carry, 129-yard rushing performance, plus a 1 yard, 1 catch performance through the year. So 130 all-purpose yards for Tracy. Like you said, first start for him, stepping up for an injured Devin Singletary, helps them win the game in Seattle. That was a very tough game to win. As a Tyrone Tracy fantasy owner, I hope the Giants do realize, hey, this is the guy that we should be using. And obviously that would, give me the fruits of his labor in the fantasy world as well, too. But just a great job by the rookie running back. And there also wasn't too many crazy performances by rookies this week. Obviously, quarterbacks, Caleb Williams played really good. Jaden Daniels played really good. But Tyrone Tracy is the guy that kind of stands out for us, I think. Moving on, though, to our power rankings, same thing that we do bi-weekly on this show. Now that the MLB's regular season is over, we're not doing those anymore. So just the NFL, they move up in the order of the power rankings because we've done them second the last few times. But we'll get it started with the team that just fell off or honorable mentions that you want to talk about, Skyler. Who do you have here?
Yeah, the Saints and the Jets are both going to drop out here because they're both pretty unproven right now with a lot of injuries. And with the Jets case, the head coach, I honestly believe that just Devontae Adams alone probably doesn't change the X's and O's of these guys this season, either of them. But it's more so about the big play opportunity he brings. So we'll see what happens with the offenses, no matter who gets them here. I probably won't bump them up immediately just because. But we still got to know what the package is, too. That hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. Three teams off the power rankings for me. It's going to be first the Steelers, who are at number 13. They've lost 2 in a row and move off the list. The Saints, who are at number 12, they now are dealing with a quarterback injury as well, too. So they go from number 12 to off the list. And then the Jets, who are at number 9 for me, do fall off the list as well, too. Obviously, I think that's pretty understanding and consensus-wise now at this point. But this is still pretty early in the season. We still got a long ways to go, of course. So this is nothing final. So we'll get into number 15, Skyler. Who did you choose to be the first team on the list?
Pittsburgh's going to stay on for me. 3-2 start, dropping down from the 11th spot, though. A little bit of a losing streak, like you said. But Justin Fields doesn't look too bad. The defense played really well against Dak. Just unfortunate how that one played out. They couldn't get points off of the turnovers. If they don't lose too many to Cincinnati and Cleveland, this is their spot right here. They'll be in the playoff race.
Number 15 for me is going to be an unranked team from our last rankings. And I decided to put the Chicago Bears on the list for their 3-2 start. And this is partially due to just how Caleb's been playing. I think every single game that we've seen from him, his QBR, his QB rating has gone up. I expect that to continue Sunday morning against the Jags in London. They have a favorable schedule against defenses over the next few weeks, too. I know the Commanders have played well, but I still think their defense could be a little shoddy. And then the Cardinals after that as well, too. So hopefully this Bears offense really looks into, take effect to what we all thought they were kind of going to be in the offseason. But as of right now, I do think they are a top half team in the NFL. Number 14.
Number 14, I have the 2-3 San Francisco 49ers dropping down a whole 10 spots here. It's really hard to prepare for something like this, but Brock Purdy's turned it up a notch. The season isn't lost, even if McCaffrey doesn't come back. you just got to learn how to play to your strengths. It's almost like an NFC version of Pittsburgh here, where they're always going to be in the hunt. I'm just losing a little bit of confidence week by week with them.
Number 14 for me, moving down three spots, is going to be the Green Bay Packers. They had a good bounce back victory over the Rams after losing to the Vikings in the past week in a game that I think we all kind of expected them to have. But now looking in the hindsight, maybe the Vikings were a bit different than what we actually all expected. Regardless, this Packers team isn't quite as good or quite as polished as I expected them to be, especially on the defensive side of the ball right now. I think that Rams team, even though they were so decimated by injury, they still found a way to kind of hang in there maybe a bit longer than I expected. And maybe that's partially due to Jordan Love throwing one of the worst pick sixes that I've seen in a long time. But still, that's also the offense not looking as good as what I expected either. So the Packers still on the list, but down three spots at number 14. Number 13.
Number 13, I'm going with the Philadelphia Eagles. They're dropping down all the way from five. So a little harsh here on San Francisco and Philly. But with the Eagles, it's not really a question about coaching or yardage right now. For me, it's all about Jalen Hurts. When you get paid like a top five quarterback and you have the same passer rating as Minshew and Daniel Jones, guys might get fired. So they're going to have to turn things around pretty quickly here. That's why I'm a little harsher on them than a team like Green Bay.
Number 13 for me is going to be where I slot the Dallas Cowboys, who were unranked in my last ranking. They go back-to-back victories versus the Giants on the Steelers, both road games, and now they face the biggest gauntlet of the season. They go to Detroit, they don't go to Detroit, but they play Detroit. Then they have a bye week, and then they go to the Niners, go to the Falcons, play at home versus the Eagles, and then play at home versus the Texans in the Battle of Texas. Just a crazy five-game stretch. I wouldn't be shocked if they go 1-4. I wouldn't be shocked if they go 2-3. But I will be shocked if they go 5-0. And if they are, they'll be a lot higher on these rankings when we do them next time. But Dallas is back into the top 15 for the first time in a couple of weeks. Number 12.
Number 12, I'm going with the unranked Tampa Bay Bucks for me. 3-2. Almost beat Atlanta. Probably should have had that one, but the bump up here is for the domination over Philly. I had to put them over Philly. They already beat Detroit, too. I really like how Baker looks so far. It's just scary. How long does this last for the warm weather teams? As soon as it gets cold, you never know what goes on with the offense.
Number 12 is going to be where I slot Philly coming out of their bye. Obviously, it's not really based off of this past week, but what they did in week four, losing by 17 points against the Buccaneers, is not something I expected at all, especially with the play by Jalen Hurts. And when your quarterback isn't playing that good, I think it got to move you down quite a bit. So they go down nine spots at number 12. Number 11.
Number 11, I'm going with the Seahawks, up a couple spots from 13. I just really love how the new Ryan Grubb offense looks in Seattle. This might extend Geno's career by another few years if they keep this thing going. And we were looking at, mock draft with Cam Ward and even before that, the past couple years, and it looks like this may not be an issue yet.
Number 11 for me is going to be where I slot the San Francisco 49ers. They do move down six spots, and they are, I believe, the only 2-3 team on my rankings. And I think it's one of the reasons why they're still on my rankings is just it's just kind of hard to believe what's going on there and how they are at a 2-3 start. The end of game chokes that we saw against the Cardinals and both the Rams are just two very out of characteristic for Kyle Shanahan-led teams. The bad red zone play as well, too, is very uncharacteristic for Shanahan-led teams. And I think they're feeling a lot of pressure. And I'm even looking on ESPN right now. The top article is that Niners feel a lot of pressure amid 2-3 start. And that's obviously partially because of the injury. And specifically talking about Christian McCaffrey now at this point, they kind of felt, going into this year, the kind of things are just going to be fine without him. And maybe they won't be, the 15-2 Niner team that they could be without CMC. But I think everybody looking at their first five games of the year would have been like, yeah, they're going to be 4-1 even without CMC, and they're not. And the Seahawks look good. The Rams are still back in the thick of it. And the Cardinals aren't going away either, as we just saw on Sunday against the Niners. Things could be rough. They play the Seahawks on Thursday Night Football. And I know CMC's not playing for that, but it might be time to, get them going a bit quicker than what they expected for what, you know, felt like they could have just maybe just not had him play in the regular season with this the injury. And now could be back sooner rather than later. Number 10,
I got the Cowboys up a couple of spots from last week, the 12 spot. They're undefeated on the road. Really tough stretch coming up, but if you can keep winning the ugly ones, the ones you're supposed to win, then you're going to stay in this range. I think they do belong in the top 10 right now, but things change really quick, like you mentioned, with the schedule coming up.
Yeah. Number 10 for me is going to be where I slot the Seahawks. They moved down two spots after back-to-back losses to the Lions on Monday Night Football and then that ugly loss against the Giants on Sunday. They have a chance to get it right against the Niners on Thursday. It's kind of the reason why I grouped the Niners and the Seahawks so close together is that we'll find out who's better on Thursday. So I didn't really want to pick one now and then be wrong in a couple days from now. But I do think the Seahawks team isn't having the same vibe that they did the first 2 weeks of the season. But it will go back to that good old happy vibe if they beat the Niners on Thursday night, because that's a huge one early in the season. Number nine,
I have the Packers at 3-2, but similar to you, I've dropped them three spots. I just had them a little higher at the sixth spot before, so I'm right on the same page with you. Jordan Love isn't 100%, but I'm banking on what these guys did to end the season last year so far. I'm not going to try to overreact here on Green Bay, especially a cold weather team. Things are only going to improve from here, you would expect, right?
Yeah. Number nine for me is going to be where I slot the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Last time we did this rankings, they were just coming off a 19-point loss to the Broncos. Since then, they beat the Eagles by 17 and lost to the Falcons in a crazy overtime thriller. And I've been pretty thoroughly impressed with the Buccaneers. And I think especially in Baker Mayfield and the play that he's had through the first 5 weeks of the year had me thinking about putting his name in the MVP category, talking about the quarter season awards that we'll get to in a little bit. But they move up six spots, and I think that's due to the quarterback play because he's been amazing. Number eight, not six.
In the eighth spot, I have the Atlanta Falcons going up from 15. Crazy roller coaster game against Tampa. Like we've mentioned, that was awesome because we knew that the defense should be improved with Raheem Morris. But now Kirk Cousins looks locked in. He's not afraid to take shots, even if there's a couple hospital balls involved. That's just his style, man. And pretty good effort in the Kansas City game. So you know it's possible if they were to match up sometime in the future.
Yeah. Number eight for me is going to be where I slot the Buffalo Bills. They were 3-0 when we did this last time, and since then they had an ugly loss to the Ravens on Sunday night, and then I would say an ugly loss against the Texans, but a game that felt like they should have had with some of the mistakes made in that game by the Texans. Regardless, they do lose. They moved down six spots in my rankings. And now go into a Monday night game against the Jets, who just fired their coach, and it feels like a must-win game even in week six for the Bills. Number seven,
I'm going with the unranked Washington Commanders at 4-1. We have to see what they look like against Dallas and Philly, of course. But so far, it's been great for Jaden Daniels. It seems impossible to keep this pace going with the roster surrounding him. But Kingsbury has everybody locked in so far. All good in Washington.
Yeah. Number seven for me is also going to be where I slot the Commanders, the unranked Commanders from last time. Like you said, winners of four in a row. I believe that's the longest win streak in the NFL besides the two unbeaten teams. That includes wins over the Giants, Bengals, Cardinals, and Browns. It's now back-to-back wins versus the Cardinals and Browns that felt very easy for them. It's not like they were just barely squeaking away in the fourth quarter. They had these games at halftime, it felt like. And now they play the Ravens in Baltimore, a really good test to see how Jaden Daniels can hold up against one of those defenses, a bit more different style than the Browns or the Cardinals or the Bengals or the Giants. And I'm excited to see, like you said, that supporting cast go against a defense that has a whole bunch of studs around them. And even though the Ravens defense hasn't been crazy this year, it's still, a group that you have to respect. But regardless, the Commanders, what a start for them. Jaden Daniels being in the MVP conversation. If he were to win MVP, I believe that's the first rookie since Jim Brown did it in like 1957, which is crazy. But this is all due to you know, Jaden Daniels and the play that he's had. So impossible not put him at least in the top 10. Number six.
On a neutral site, I'm going to have the Commanders losing to the Buffalo Bills. So I ended up giving Buffalo the nod here, even though they've lost two in a row, dropping down four spots. Some tough losses to Baltimore and Houston. But Josh Allen will keep these guys up here as long as he's healthy. He's going to be leading this division. And if the season did end today, they'd be pretty high up there.
Number six for me is going to be where I slot the Atlanta Falcons, who are 3-2. The past two games are big. They won close divisional games against the Saints and the Buccaneers. They move up eight spots for me. Just took a bit longer than what I expected for this offense to click. But now that it has, I feel like it's going to stay that way. Versus the defenses that they play the next couple of weeks, I think they'll be fine as well, too. This Atlanta team is really good, in my opinion. I think they're going to, you know, be that way now for the rest of the season. Number five.
We start heading into the upper echelon here. We'll kick it off with the Houston Texans, up four spots from last week. It's a little bit of a sophomore slump from this team, and that's why I had them down at the nine spot a couple weeks ago, but nobody cares if you end up winning those games. That's four out of five to start up the season. They're in a great position, no matter what the numbers look like.
Number five for me, actually, is going to be where I slot the Detroit Lions, who are 3-1 and coming out of a bye now. They play the Cowboys, try to get revenge for that crazy game that we saw last year, next week. They move up two spots for me. I mean, there's not really too much to note about the Lions. It's kind of what we expected from them. They're just doing so far. So back in the top five after being at number seven last time. And I think things are all good in Detroit for the first time in a long time, whatever sport you're talking about, except for basketball. Things are still really bad there. Number four.
At number four, I got the undefeated Minnesota Vikings. They're jumping up four spots from eight. It's the best point differential in the NFL at a plus 63. Darnold's playing awesome. It's a nasty defense under Brian Flores. This team should be in the playoffs.
Number four for me is going to be where I slot the Baltimore Ravens. They move up two spots from the last rankings. And if we were just talking about through 2 weeks, this team felt like it was on panic mode. Now it does not feel that way. They beat the Cowboys in Dallas, which we know has been really tough to do over the past couple of years. They beat the shit out of the Bills, and then they had a crazy offensive performance against the Bengals. Lamar Jackson's playing like the MVP. We'll talk more about that in a little bit, perhaps. But the Ravens are back. They're back in the top five teams, in my opinion. And that's due to their quarterback and their running back being a unrealistic Madden-type duo. Number three.
At number three is where I have the Baltimore Ravens. They're jumping up from the seventh spot. At this point in the season, it could be hard to separate some fluky struggles to a team that has serious problems. But the fact that I have them at three here should let you know I don't care that much about the Raiders' loss. I care a lot more about the beatdown on primetime against Buffalo. And then coming back to beat Joe Burr with 41 points, that says a lot about this team's ability to keep a short memory.
Number three for me is going to be where I slot the Houston Texans. They move up seven spots from the last rankings for me. And I think after some reevaluation I did these past couple of weeks, I think I underrated the Texans quite a bit. And I didn't really realize how good CJ Stroud is. I know he's obviously really young and is a really good quarterback, but I didn't really put him in that upper echelon tier. And after hearing how some of these NFL players, former NFL players, were talking about him and his ability, I was like, yeah, I kind of got to bump him up a little bit. And I think a victory against the Bills, even when he didn't look that great, was really big. And to find a way, especially at the end of the game, to have the ball late and go ahead and get yourself into field goal range, which isn't too much of an ask for Kyemi Fairbairn and how good he's been. But this Texans team is back. This defense is good. They've been dealing with injuries. They're still going to deal with injuries now with Nico Collins potentially out a couple of weeks. But hopefully Mixon's back for them now. And they still have a ton of weapons, even without Nico Collins. So I think they'll be fine. Playing the Patriots and Drake May on Sunday. Number two.
So I do have the Lions still above Minnesota, moving up one spot here, because the offense can catch fire at any moment. I really think it's the second most loaded team in football. there's some tough games coming up on the road, Dallas, Minnesota. So they could really make a case for being the most dominant team in the NFC in a couple weeks from now.
Yeah. Minnesota is going to be my number two team. They're 5-0. They move up two spots in the last rankings. I guess I had them at number four after week three, because they did beat the shit out of the Texans in week three. Went into Lambeau the week after that and got a victory, and then took a victory against the Jets, even though it wasn't on the it was on the road, but it wasn't in an opposing advantageous territory or whatever, if you want to describe it as such. Regardless, going into the bye week 5-0 is better than what you could have ever expected if you're a Vikings fan. And coming out of that bye week, you have the Lions in a game that really means a ton for your belief in your team, I think, the dignity of your team, and just kind of the all around vibe around the team. Because if you lose to the Lions and it's ugly and it's bad, then you're like, yep, this team isn't what we think it is. But if they beat the Lions and go 6-0, that's when it really starts getting scary as this Vikings team, a legitimate Super Bowl contender. But number one, we all know who it is, but we're still going to talk about them, the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, it feels like the Chiefs haven't lost a game in years. That's because they always have the formula to win the ugly games, like we've been talking about. Mahomes has played near the bottom of his expectations these past few weeks, and it's still an average of 300 yards, 70% completion. Kareem Hunt has stepped up. Juju Smith-Schuster has stepped up. The entire defense, they don't really have a lot of weaknesses right now, other than Jawan Taylor.
Yeah. Number one is going to be Kansas City. It's unchanged, and I think it's going to remain unchanged even if they do lose a game or two throughout the season. And it's not even the offense that I'm impressed with. It's the defense and just how together that group has been from day one. Holding the Ravens to 20 points. And I know they had a bit of a slip up against the Bengals, allowing 25, but they responded, allowing 17 against the Falcons, 10 against the Chargers, and 13 last night against the Saints. The defense is the best part of this team, and their offense is still damn good as well, too, even though they haven't put up the crazy numbers that we've seen from typical Kansas City Super Bowl winning teams. I believe I've said this in the past on here. I know I've said it to you at some point, whether it's on the podcast or not, that this feels like the Brady era with the Patriots, where it's just defense reliant. Mm-hmm. And if you have a good enough offense to just be okay, the defense is just going to keep you in every single game. And then when it comes to the playoffs, you just have to be better than the other team, that thing. That's all it is. And I feel like the Chiefs understand that. I think they're kind of in a bit of a load management era as well, too, with Kelce and some of the other guys, and making sure that they don't really, show their hand early in the season. And maybe that can lead to them dropping some games, but I still think, even with three losses at the end of the year or whatever it may be, they're still going to be the number one seed. Still going to win the AFC West, that's for sure, because they're miles ahead of every single team in that division. And they're probably going to win three in a row because they are who they are.
Dude, they were sending in Gage 8 the entire second half. Perfect coverage on the outside. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And they have the refs on their side. I know I don't want to be that guy, but there was the play pretty much when the game was over, honestly. But Jay Kaner threw the ball to Olave, and I believe it was Brian Cook who just like tackled Olave like a second before the ball got there. And Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, let's take a look at the replay. And Troy Aikman was like, yeah, that is definitely pass interference. but regardless, the Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl regardless if they have the refs on their side or not.
Damn.
Into quarter season awards, there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 awards that we will do, starting off with the most valuable player. Who is the MVP through 5 weeks of the NFL season?
I was surprised to see how unpopular of a pick this was when I was doing my research, but I still think it's Josh Allen. 8 touchdowns, no interceptions. The roster is not as good as Baltimore or Houston. That's why they lost, right? The defense has been destroyed with injuries. The wide receiver room is looking a little thin these days. And Josh Allen's been the most efficient quarterback in the league. That's how Lamar won it last year. I'm going to give him the nod over Lamar and Darnold so far.
Yeah, I wanted to put Sam Darnold. I wanted to put Baker Mayfield. And I was...
I guess Kirk,
Yeah, I typed in originally Sam Darnold, and I looked at it, and I was just like, dude, I can't do this yet. I really can't. And I was thinking about putting Josh Allen, but I think this last week that we saw from Lamar Jackson really shows that he's been the MVP in the NFL through the first 5 weeks of the season, especially the play that he made to make it a three-point game late in that one where he rolled out to his right, stiff-armed a guy to the ground who's also 100 pounds heavier than him, and then threw like off of his back foot into the back of the end zone and found a wide open Isaiah Likely. It was a ridiculous play. And he's been full of ridiculous plays this entire season. 1,200 passing yards, 9 passing touchdowns, only 1 interception, which I think is huge for him. 363 rushing yards, 2 rushing touchdowns, 3 fumbles, but a couple of those have been on snaps, so it's not necessarily his fault specifically. But Lamar Jackson, I think, is due for his third MVP. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I'm not upset about this at all. Mm-hmm. So we're clear.
On to offensive player of the year, and I think we might be on the same page here.
I got to go with Derrick Henry. Most people in the news thought that this was the end of Derrick Henry. He would slowly turn into Gus Edwards and fade away into the sunset, but he's done the complete opposite. Under a makeshift O-line, it's 115 yards per game. It's 6 touchdowns. It's the most plays of 20-plus yards from a running back in the entire league with 7. It has to be Derrick Henry, right?
Yeah. I wanted to put Saquon,
but the bye hurts.
Maybe the bye at this point definitely hurts you 5 weeks into the season. So I'm definitely putting Derrick Henry for now. And that's no shot on Derrick Henry for, oh, he's only here because Saquon's on the bye or had a bye, whatever. But King Henry, his 95 carries for 572 rushing yards is 6 yards per carry. That's college level good. 6 touchdowns, only 1 fumble, 6 catches, 49 receiving yards, and a touchdown through the air as well, too. The NFL posts their weekly graphics of, you know, the rushing leaders, the receiving leaders, passing leaders, whatnot. And I believe it was last week's graphic where it was Henry 1, Jordan Mason 2, and there was a retweet of it that I saw where his wife is Derrick Henry is showing exactly why running backs still do matter, and then Jordan Mason is showing exactly why running backs do not matter. And I think that's a funny thing. It just shows the difference in what you have had and what you haven't had, especially with the Ravens having, you know, J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards, Keaton Mitchell, Tyson Williams, you know, all these different guys that have been there throughout the year that just haven't really been able to get it done. Then you put in that elite guy and it's going. And I don't know exactly how to interpret that, because maybe it's just having a really good old line. Maybe it's having a good back. Maybe it's a combination of both. Maybe it's scheme fit and just you're having good runners for, you know, the things that you want to play. But Derrick Henry's been the best offensive non-quarterback position player so far this year. He's just been great. So I got to give it to him. Defensive player of the year. We talked about this guy. We had a little conversation about this guy. I'm just curious to see if you put him here.
Yeah, it looks like my Micah Parsons pick is just about done for after his injury. So I'm going to actually go with Xavier McKinney of Green Bay. It's 5 interceptions in 5 games, and he dropped his 6th last week, too. He's just an absolute ball hawk. I have to give an honorable mention to Fred Warner, who will probably win it when it comes down to it at the end of the year, because he also has taken the ball away in every single game, just in a different way every time. But to see McKinney completely change schemes and he's still taking the ball away like it's a piece of candy from a baby, it's pretty funny. He's just leaping through the air.
Yeah, I went with McKinney as well, too. This is a guy I was a huge fan of when he was at Alabama. And I know, like you said, exactly, this probably won't be something that stands, because it always ends up this way where there's somebody who has, you know, 4 picks in 3 weeks or something crazy like that. And then that's obviously, it's, you know, something that can't stand over time, because either one, you're not going to play that dumb of offenses anymore, or two, you know, they're just not going to happen. It's just not going to go that way because there's a ton of luck still involved with this stuff. But 5 interceptions in 5 games and 6 passes defense and a tackle for a loss, pretty ridiculous. So Xavier McKinney, through 5 weeks, I got to give you your flowers.
Yeah.
For being defensive player of the first quarter of the NFL season. On to the rookies. Offensive rookie of the year first. Skyler, who'd you choose here?
There's been some amazing running backs so far as expected, but I'm going to have to go with Jaden Daniels over Caleb for this one. For a rookie to immediately put up top 10 numbers was unheard of before CJ Stroud, and we shouldn't take either of them for lightly, especially that 73 QBR. That's good for number three in all of football.
Yeah. I think you could definitely make a case for Malik Nabers here as well, too. What he's done for the Giants offense and just being perhaps one of the top five receivers in all of football, not even just statistics-wise, but just how good you are-wise, is pretty crazy. But Jaden Daniels, I think, is a pretty unanimous choice right now. And just what he's done, not just winning games, but to complete passes at the rate that he has is ridiculous. 77.1% through your first five games is ridiculous.
I think
exactly. Like if you see 50%, it's bad, but you aren't too shocked in the first five games of an NFL career, especially for a guy who doesn't have, yes, Terry McLaurin, he's great, but he doesn't have a CJ Stroud supporting cast or, you know, some of these other teams that, or not CJ Stroud, Caleb Williams, for example, you know, has Rome, has Keenan Allen, has Cole Kmet, has DJ Moore. Like, he's got a lot of guys to throw to. And that's no shot on Caleb for not being as good as Jaden Daniels, but Daniels has just been amazing. 1,100 yards through the air, four passing touchdowns, two interceptions, 300 rushing yards for four touchdowns and only two fumbles as well, too. He's just been really good. So he's my offensive rookie of the year. The next one's a bit more complicated because there isn't a lot of statistical performances right now going on, but how about defensive rookie of the year?
Yeah, just like you said it, this is probably the toughest one to gauge out of all the awards because it looks like most of the top defenders in this class are going through a redshirt year, and that's probably something that's going to continue happening. And I think it does come down to the two guys that we chose, Verse and Latu. So I'm going to end up sticking with my pick, Laiatu Latu with the Colts, because he has two strip sacks so far. If you take the ball away, I love you.
Yeah, that's valid. My defensive rookie of the year, pretty poor performance as far as stats goes. It's only one sack, but I went with Jared Verse. This is a guy I chose prior to the year. This is a guy who I liked in college. This is a guy who I've liked the film so far as well, too. Just his ability is just fun to watch as far as an athlete goes coming off the edge. But only one sack, maybe not the best statistical performance so far, but he's going to be just fine in the long run, I think, and especially if that Rams team stays together for a long time.
I'm glad you stuck with your pick, too, because that's how I felt. Yeah. Like, it's too close to change, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I was going through just kind of the stuff that I've seen so far on, like, ESPN, you know, your number of sacks, forced fumbles, all that stuff, and I was like, yeah, this isn't going to help. Let me go to the odds. Let me just see who people think are going to win right now. And I'll go based off of that as well, too. But moving on to Comeback Player of the Year, kind of a weird award every single year. But, Skyler, who do you choose so far through the quarter?
It's normally a weird one, but maybe the easiest one for me. I'm going with Sam Darnold. He's looked elite this season, basically the entire season, if you take away the second half in the rain in London when he struggled. But awesome for him, man. Awesome. I mean, Damar Hamlin maybe gets another shot at it if he doesn't get hurt again because he had a nice pick, but looks like he won't be playing this year. So, Sam Darnold.
I decided to go with Kirk Cousins as my comeback player.
Forgot he was hurt too. Yeah.
Because he was hurt. Sam Darnold was just the backup. And I understand that as a comeback player of the year, you know, aspect as well too. And I think Sam Darnold definitely could be the guy who ends up getting it if he has a season like this throughout the entire year. But Kirk Cousins, he went through it a lot last year and was really good in the first, you know, five or six games before he got hurt. I think we saw with him just kind of the questions of, is he the same guy anymore? And when you're a pocket passer, I really don't think a torn Achilles is going to affect you that much. So he's been great. He's been really good. And he's been really good at, you know, kind of filling into that Atlanta vibe that he does so funnily well, or so comedically well, I guess, so to speak. Coach of the year.
I'm going back-to-back Minnesota. It's Kevin O'Connell, because these guys could have used every excuse in the book and been totally justified for a slow start. Well, they're 5-0. O'Connell's got their guys ready to go. And sometimes it's not all about the X's and O's. It's about the leadership. We saw that with Robert Saleh today. He's got a great defense. Some guys just know how to get their players ready to go out and start off a season hot.
Yeah. doing this yesterday, I originally had Robert Saleh here, but he got fired. No, I did not have him. I decided I had Kevin Connell from the get-go, and what he's done in Minnesota to – I don't want to, like, not give Sam Darnold credit, but just the project of Sam Darnold that he kind of had, and having your quarterback and J.J. McCarthy get hurt and just be out for the entire year, the guy that you drafted and kind of was like, from day one, this is going to be our guy. Maybe Sam Darnold might start the first few weeks in that for us, but McCarthy's going to be the guy. And he gets hurt, you have Sam Darnold come in and just be better than what we could have ever expected. Definitely deserved it for me. I think Raheem Morris also deserves a little bit of credit as well too. I think Dan Quinn can deserve some credit as well too. But Kevin O'Connell, especially if the Vikings win like 13, 14, 15 games, definitely is going to get the support.
All right.
Moving on to the second half, Skyler. Tell me about the Heisman watch.
Yeah, I think we finally have a consensus short list of guys who can actually get sent on this trip to New York. So let's get right into it. I'm going to start with the honorable mention and then go back up to number one, because it's a guy we've already talked about. So we'll start off with Bryson Daly at the honorable mention spot. I started watching him after you tweeted, and he's really having an incredible season. If you remember Keenan Reynolds, he was a Heisman finalist about 10 years ago for Navy. Very similar situation. 15 total touchdowns and no turnovers for the undefeated Black Knights. This guy runs people over at quarterback. So shout out Bryson Daly. We'll definitely be checking in on him now every week. We'll go back up to the top. Ashton Jeanty, Boise State running back. We talked about the numbers already. It's nuts. As a Boise State fan, the biggest thing for me has been how he brings something new out for us every week. It's like he runs guys over just to prove that he can break 20 tackles, or he'll randomly decide to reverse field when he thinks it's time for a 70-yard house call. So I love it. He's at the top. Number two, right next to him, Travis Hunter, Colorado. There's nobody like Travis in the entire nation. If he makes a couple of game-winning plays to beat number 18 K-State, there's definitely a case where he jumps Jeanty just because of the strength of schedule. And I think that's all we need to talk about Travis with. Just incredible. Number three, the first quarterback here, Cam Ward of Miami, an unbelievable comeback in Berkeley on Saturday night, 437 yards, pretty much solidifies him as the top quarterback in this race. Miami has a bye before going to Louisville in 2 weeks. At number four, I'm going to keep Jalen Milroe on the list. They lost to Vandy, but Milroe didn't give up 40 points to Vanderbilt. He still had a pretty efficient game, 300 through the air, two touchdowns, almost bringing him back. It's another situation we just got to give him some more time, I think. It's a brand new system, and he decided to stay. So good for him. At the number five spot, we have a tie. I couldn't decide. It's Ryan Williams and it's Jeremiah Smith, the top two receiver recruits in this freshman class, have been above and beyond their expectations already. They each have six touchdowns after earning wide receiver one on their respected top 10 schools. So I feel like these are the seven guys we got to watch out for by the end of the year. Maybe we'll have some late season quarterback pushes, but no one I think is going to surpass these top three guys of Jeanty, Hunter, Cam Ward. All right. Should I jump right into the preview?
Go ahead.
Looks like another pretty epic week of college football. That's the one positive of this wacky new schedule and conferences. We start off on Friday night, a battle in the desert, 16th ranked Utah at Arizona State. It's the 2-4-1 Big 12 schools. This conference is completely wide open and important for a team like Boise or Army if they do somehow jump them and get the first round bye. Gotta love the chaos in the Big 12. On Saturday morning, 9 a.m., we'll start it off with South Carolina's nasty defense trying to do the unthinkable, handing number 7 Bama a back-to-back loss. I want to know how Milroe reacts when they go down early again, because it probably won't be for long, but just in case, we'll see. Does he have what it takes? 12:30 is when things really kick off. It's number 1 Texas at number 18 Oklahoma, the Red River rivalry or shootout, which I prefer. Probably will be the most or the second most watched game this week because of the highly anticipated return of Quinn Ewers, Texas quarterback. If this game is a blowout for Texas, we can always flip it to Arizona at number 14 undefeated BYU. Pretty good story. or Cal at number 22, undefeated Pitt. They play at the same time. And at 4:30, the game of the week, it's number 2, Ohio State at number 3, Oregon in Otson. Dylan Gabriel needs to get his shit together or they're going to get absolutely steamrolled by the Buckeyes. That's my opinion. And if that does happen, we always got at the same time, number 9, Ole Miss at number 13, LSU. A big one, not only for a potential playoff spot in a tough conference, but it's the quarterbacks because Jackson Dart and Grant Nussmeier are starting to get some serious consideration for the NFL because who we originally thought would go in the first round, not playing very well. These guys could play themselves up from a potential developmental seventh rounder to a second rounder who will get a couple of starts someday. So I'll definitely check in on those quarterbacks for that reason.
Yeah, moving on to our positional draft check-in that we did a few weeks ago before the NFL season started. We did a wide receiver tight end draft. We did a running back draft and a quarterback draft. The quarterback is something that we'll get to next week. There's just a lot of numbers in there. I didn't get a chance to put everything together. But for the wide receiver, the running backs will be something we can look at now and kind of give a check-in there. Starting off with the wide receivers and Skyler's team specifically, started off with Tyreek and CeeDee Lamb. However, he also chose A.J. Brown, who's been hurt for most of the year, Laporta, but having Mike Evans and Malik Nabers has helped the total quite a bit. So you have 604 points based off of 199 catches, 1,800 receiving yards, and 15 touchdowns. For my wide receivers, I chose Amon-Ra and I did choose Jamar Chase, but Justin Jefferson in my first two rounds. My team's been headlined by Jamar Chase, really. Justin Jefferson, Drake London, who's had a good year as well, too. And then it's been bad in the sense that Puka has only 4 catches. And Devontae Adams has not played the past couple of weeks. And Keenan Allen just hasn't been good. But regardless, 209 catches for me, 2,100 yards, and 20 touchdowns. I have 719 points to Skyler's 604. So there's a slight edge for me right now, but there's still a long way to go, of course. Onto the running back side, this one is a bit more crazy because I had to calculate the rushing yards, the receptions, receiving yards, and the touchdowns all together. And that, for Skyler's, he had his team led off with Breece Hall, but also had Jonathan Taylor, Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, Kenneth Walker, but also that includes a Mixon, Pacheco, who have been hurt for some games in there as well, too. But in total, 2,200 rushing yards, 22 touchdowns, 118 catches, 300 receiving yards, 2 touchdowns in the air for 728 points there. And then for me, my team was led by Christian McCaffrey, who is zeros across the board. But with that being said, that also included a Saquon, Kyren Williams, James Cook, Alvin Kamara. But on the other side of that, there's also Zamir White, who I chose. Devon Achane, who's been hurt. And Raheem Mostert, who just has been a backup. Looking at that now, probably not the greatest choice. Regardless, 1,900 yards, 25 touchdowns, 116 catches, 500 receiving yards and 5 touchdowns, good for 806 points. So far, I got a slight edge in both of them, but quarterback will be something we get to later in further episodes, not this week, but still a long ways to go regardless. A lot of injuries to go. Yeah. And something that else has a long ways to go because it just started today is the NHL season. Obviously, we're very, very casual fans in the NHL. I like the Sharks, and I'll root for the Sharks, and I'll watch the Sharks games. Skyler, I think, knows about 10 players in the league. But with the season starting today, figured why not choose the winner of the Stanley Cup? It's probably the most prestigious award, or not the award, prestigious trophy in sports, and definitely the coolest one. Skyler, who do you think is going to win the Cup?
So like you mentioned, I don't know too much about projecting hockey because I mainly know just the top scorers in the league, which is about 10, like you said. So I'm going to say that McDavid and the Oilers finally get one. They break the Gretzky curse. And I'll take a shot in the dark here for the runner-up from the East and say that the Boston Bruins finally beat the Panthers because Bruins captain David Pastrnak is one of the only guys I truly watch whenever he plays a game. and I go look up his highlights because they beat Matthews in Toronto last year. So let's keep this thing rolling. Pasternak's only 28, I found out. I thought he was much older. I guess that's just hockey for you, right? Guys lose teeth and look a little older. So yeah. I got McDavid and the Oilers over Boston.
Yeah. For the Eastern Conference, I decided to choose Boston as my team as well, too.
Okay.
I was listening to Boston Connor today from the Pat McAfee show, just really get hyped up about the Bruins. And I was like, yeah, you know, I could actually see that happening. And then on the Western Conference side, it's a bit different. I'll go Vancouver. They've been really good recently, and I know they made a deep run last year. I'm going to go with the Bruins, though, to win it all over Vancouver. Hopefully the Sharks make the playoffs. That'd be cool. I don't think we're projected to, but I know we have a young team that could be fun to watch and maybe learn more about hockey this year. But moving into the Lamps Bowl predictions that we've had, it was a good week last week for us. We went 3 out of 4. My pick starting off for the Lamp was San Diego Padres advancing. That did happen. I wish I specifically chose them in 2 because that's what I did in our picks, but they still win. Regardless, Skyler had UCLA plus 27.5 at number 7 Penn State. That did happen, even in a loss for the Bruins, but they still cover. Of course, this week I chose the Seahawks plus 3.5 versus the Niners. That game is in Seattle. I think they'll be able to cover. I don't know if they're going to win, but to lose by a field goal, I think, is definitely something reasonable to happen.
Yeah, I have a very similar situation here in a rivalry game for my layup. I have the Tampa Bay Bucks minus 3.5 on the road in New Orleans. And that's because I imagine if Derek Carr gets announced that he's not playing at some point this week, this will shoot up to 6.5, maybe even more. And we know Tampa Bay thrives in chaos. They just got to win by a touchdown. That's all.
Yeah. Moving on to the bold predictions. Last week, I had the Detroit Tigers advancing to the next round of the playoffs. They did do that, of course. Skyler had Tampa Bay over Atlanta on Thursday Night Football. Maybe if the coin flip went differently, it could have happened. But, of course, that's not how it went. So that does go red, the only red of the week, which is a good thing. This week, I have the Giants winning on Sunday Night Football versus the Bengals. Giants are plus 145, so a bit of a bold prediction there as they get a victory to go back to 500.
Going with some college football for the bold prediction. I mentioned this game earlier. I'm going to have number 13 LSU winning against number 9 Ole Miss. It's basically a pick 'em since it's at LSU here, so I didn't include the number, but I still think it's a bold prediction because Ole Miss is ranked 9th. I think the Ole Miss offense is very gimmicky. That's why Jackson Dart's not going to succeed at the end of the season. LSU, on the other hand, we have lots of evidence that this offense works. It helps young quarterbacks like a Grant Nussmeier. If you have a guy you trust like Kyron Lacy and a good safety valve, and that's what they got. So they should be able to put up some numbers here against Ole Miss.
That's going to do it, though, for episode 213. We're about 10 minutes away from first pitch in San Diego of game 3 of that NLDS series, which we're looking forward to watch. But yeah, next week we will know the NL and ALCS. I believe the series probably would have started, if not being getting ready to start by then. Another week in the NFL, the NHL season would have started. And the NBA season was creeping up upon us as well, too. I believe the first game is in 2 weeks from today on the 22nd. So that's pretty crazy. But we will see you guys next week for episode 214. Yeah. You got any closing remarks?
Maybe the least psyched I've been for an NBA season, just because the Warriors are getting a little older every year. And it seems like a lot of the teams that kind of ignored their load management are due for some big injuries. We see Luka's already banged up. That's just absolutely brutal for Dallas and may change some of our playoff picks when we get there in a couple of weeks. But yeah, other than that, let's go Jeff Ulbrich. Let's see what you got, man. Let's see.
Brick.
Bring the heat, Brick.